How do you do?
Mr. Carl Linley feels it would be a little unkind to present this picture without just a word of friendly warning. It is one of the strangest tales ever told. It deals with the two great mysteries of creation, life and death. I think it will thrill you. It may shock you. It might even horrify you. So if any of you feel that you do not care to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to, well, we've warned you.
Coming, batteries to power.
Got bat robots hunting down Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids.
It sounded good at the time, but I don't see this working out now.
Who the hell are you, anyone?
I don't know.
Who is this irresistible creature who has an insatiable love for the dead?
Long Shot Ken.
I see this whole segment going wrong.
Big Papa P.
Just sitting out in the air gathering flies.
There is another dude, I forget.
Den.
You didn't call him a person. You called him God.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Loud Idiots Radio Broadcast, your source for comic books, sci-fi, horror, fantasy, professional wrestling, and all the various and diverse elements of geek culture. So strap yourself to your chair, pull open your ears, and grab your D20 tight, because the show is about to begin.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us again tonight. I'm so happy to be here. I'm Big Papa Pete.
I, as always, am Long Shot Ken.
We are the Loud Idiots.
Collectively, yes.
Indeed we are.
We have an interesting show tonight. It's
quite
our second show.
I hate this time of year.
Why's that?
Because it's back to school.
Oh, then...
I always hated going back to school.
You showed up for the wrong show tonight, then,
I
man.
I did.
Now, we have a very...
I was here for Near Mint, and you just roped me back into this.
Is that how that works?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, now, we have a great show tonight. I have some blasts from my personal past. I have Bill DeAndrea, who is the director, writer, producer of the...
whole shebang.
It's a musical called Nether Region.
Yeah, Nether Region, the musical, which we performed a year ago around Halloween last year. So,
wow. I wound up finding out about it through social media. You had posted a video.
Correct, yes.
And that's kind of how you and I reconnected.
Right.
I'm really curious to talk a lot about it. I was amazed by what I saw in the video. I have a lot of questions about it. I, unfortunately, was not able to see the show. So I've got a lot of questions. And next to you is someone, again, from my past, someone that I was in high school with, Dorothy Dabkowski.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. Great to be here. Thank you.
Mr. DeAndrea, you were also my high school English teacher in junior year.
You had to remind me.
Well, actually, I could go one worse and say I made a joke about it on the air last week, but 2 weeks ago I attended my 20th high school reunion.
So, oh my goodness.
Amazing.
I wouldn't say it was
Don't
amazing, but
me.
So Dorothy, can I still call you Dot? I used to call you Dot.
Yeah, of course. Whatever works.
You were in the marching band like me.
Mm-hmm.
My freshman year was your senior year, I believe,
yeah.
And you were the drum majorette. You actually took care and conducted the group out there on the field.
Yep.
Was that the start or one of the things that helped push your professional career?
I would say yes, largely because that was a nice way to really feel my oats, you know, in terms of being the leader of a large ensemble. And I mean, I think I was always interested in performing. But that was an exciting time because to be running out on the field and having all those, you know, all those football fans out there just cheering and the adrenaline pumping, I think was a nice kickoff.
All right, I'm gonna take you off the hook of that for a little bit. We're gonna come back to that.
Okay.
I did mention Bill's play Nether Region. Can you tell us a little bit about the show and what it's about?
Yeah, it's a very dramatic piece in the sense that it deals with teenage suicide. I had my stepdaughter about 4 years ago took her own life when she was living in Florida with her dad, And it was my goal after that, after I saw the stuff that she went through, that I wanted to present something that I could take from our relationship and bring it to the stage so other kids could see what's going on, you know, how these things develop from my point of view, which is a sort of transcendental or spiritual point of view.
And it's powerful stuff. I mean, it's very strong stuff. And one of the questions I guess I would have would be, where do you find that in you to be able to, you know, take this personal thing that happened and turn it into a piece of art?
Well, the thing is that it's sort of like my teaching career. I always wanted to sort of entertain my kids, but at the same time get across the important themes in the literature and everything like that. So when I wrote this play, I didn't want people going home depressed. I wanted to make it a good experience, and I have to say it really uplifted the audience, right, Dorothy?
Yeah, I think the feedback we got was people really related to it. You know, I think because so many pieces of the storyline were true or from true events, I think people could sort of find their experience reflected in it. And then, you know, sort of moving through, because it was a rock musical, I think the songs made it a little bit easier to take on all of that kind of heavy information and then move through the end when things sort of lightened up and, you know, lifted up out of the real darkness, you know, that it started in.
Briefly, the show it starts off as a cooking show. The girl who took her own life is brought back by Michael the Archangel.
That's not the true part. That's just the framework of the show. Just
what do you mean? Anyway, so she's doing this cooking show, but the theme of this is there's somebody in the audience who's thinking of taking his own life, and for her, she has to get him to change his mind during the show. He becomes part of the play as we go along, and so that's the way it. That was the scenario. But then she goes back and there's all these flashbacks into her life. And in the play, Dorothy played her grandmother.
Yay. So that was different. You,
wait, haven't I seen you play older characters on stage though before?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. I once had to fill in for a play where my husband was like probably 65 years old. I grayed up. It was fun. It doesn't matter. I mean, you know, age is nothing on stage. Right.
But yeah. In this play, after she passes in the story, she comes back and she youthens. Yes.
Wow. Back to actually probably the age that I am now, so that's more or less.
I've got words about George Lucas about that, actually. The end of Return of the Jedi there? Never mind.
So this is all over the place, the musical.
So let me ask you, so one of the main characters then, you said, is part of the audience. Do you actually have the character planted
beforehand,
them.
Yeah.
Now, how early do you get him set up sitting in the seats with everybody?
Well, he sort of becomes the skeptic, and when Michael the Archangel's voice comes down, and then there's Lucifer as well, he just loses it and runs onto the stage and says, that's supposed to be the devil.
So the house usually opens for the audience members to come in maybe half hour to 20 minutes before the show starts. So he's in play, or I don't know if he walked in with the audience members or if he was already seated, but so people sat around him.
Yeah, so it's not obvious.
No. Yeah. He doesn't.
So that's really cool. Yeah. I like
and
that.
He's sort of sitting in a way like, you know, I'm here, but do I really want to be here? You know, somebody dragged me here.
So he's acting even sitting in the audience.
He's acting, yeah, from the very beginning, before we all are. We're still drinking tea and putting on makeup upstairs.
But that was another Clifton High School graduate, Chris Robertson,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
who does a lot of work in the area here. I don't know.
He works at Medieval Times. And he does a lot.
He's a knight at Medieval Times.
He's
sometimes the good knight,
times.
Sometimes the bad knight. But he gets knocked off horses with lances.
That is so cool.
It is like the coolest thing.
It's an awesome job.
And he does a lot.
I think I wasted my life.
What am I doing with my life?
The ATC.
With ATC Theater here in Clifton as well. He does a lot with them. So
cool. Now it's also a rock show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you compose the music as well?
Yes,
Bill,
I did. I did. That's been my history. I started doing theater when I wrote a rock opera back in the old days called Manfred. It was Lord Byron's poetic drama, strangely enough, about a man that only wants to die, but he has the curse of eternal life, but he doesn't have eternal youth. So he's living forever, but he's getting older and older. I think there was a legend about the grasshopper or something. That's how the grasshopper formed, was somebody that was had eternal life but didn't have eternal youth.
It's like the inverse of this show.
Anyway, I wrote that rock music. Next thing, somebody told me it's going to Broadway, and you know, next thing I know, I'm meeting Ben Vereen and all these famous people of the day. I had to reject Jesus for a part
because
Superstar was closing on Broadway, and they were the actors in that, Mary Magdalene too. They were my musical director. Was their agent. And so when our show was supposed to open on Broadway, they came and auditioned for me.
Oh, wow.
And here I was auditioning Jesus and telling him he wasn't right for the part.
You know what, though? I think he's got other things going on, so that's...
Which is...
Don't worry, you'll be back.
I think I'm paying for it now.
Not to worry.
Tell me a little bit about how you wound up becoming a teacher.
Basically... when I was in high school, I had a teacher I enjoyed very much, and it was a Latin class. And I thought, oh my God, I got a Latin class. And I used to leave that class feeling so uplifted and so much fun, and I used to look forward to that class every day.
As hard as the classes, I'm assuming, were. It's not an easy language.
Well, if you remember, we used to do vocabulary and rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
He taught me that, but we used to use Latin words. Anyway, I always left with a good feeling. I thought if I could do that for kids, you know, in terms of my strength was literature and English. So.
Now, before I wound up meeting you, you were in West Milford instead of Clifton High School?
No, I was at Passaic County Tech in Wayne. And I have had many careers. I was a horse trainer and driver in the Pacers, and then I went back to teaching, and then the job at Clifton came by. They needed an English teacher and a musical director, and I sort of fit that bill.
Yep, and the year, probably the year before you were a freshman, we did a rock musical version of Romeo and Juliet.
Ah, that's really?
It was a very interesting take on an old classic.
Yeah.
We had Mercutio's dream rap.
Right.
And lots
my
of
name
other fun
is
stuff.
Mickey.
Oh, please tell me there's a video of that out there somewhere.
There is.
No, but I will tell you this, and I do. I have it on VHS. On VHS. VHS.
Yes. Now I don't feel so old anymore.
but
we've got a working player right here in the studio.
When the movie came out, my dad said to me, "Oh, I want to go see that movie." And I was like, "Dad, it's pretty depressing. Like, I don't think it's for you." "No, no," he goes, "because I loved when you did it in high school. I love that closing song. It was really beautiful."
Oh.
And I had to explain to him that it's not a musical and that the song was written by the teacher, you know, and the director at the time. So he was both excited and disappointed by that information. But, and then we whipped out the video, you know, sort of pulled it out of the archives.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what the first show you did was in the high schools?
I think it could have been The Odd Couple.
Oh, wow.
Which was not a musical, but...
Right.
It was at Passaic County Tech. They didn't have a drama department started there. Now they do. They have a very good one there. And we did that first with the kids. And then I sort of left teaching for a while because I was going to Broadway. And obviously, we didn't make it to Broadway. Mm-hmm. But I wound up writing and doing another musical called Circus, which did make it to off-Broadway. And at that time, I needed money. And
as most artists do.
The musical director at Glenridge High School was a college mate of mine, and she knew I had New York experience with directing and everything, so she asked me to come in and direct the high school productions, and that's where I never mentioned to you kids, but did you know?
Oh,
I directed
Real quick, before you do that, Dorothy, did you have...
I never had Mr. D'Andrea as a teacher, but when I started, so our first playing in Clifton was Romeo and Juliet first year.
No, I was just ready to have someone be there say, okay, I can corroborate everything that he's saying that he actually did, which he's
saying
he didn't do.
Oh, yes. Well, we all knew. I mean, that was like...
So, yes, one of the things
exciting news.
One of the things I do remember are the stories about how... Go ahead.
How I was Tom Cruise's high school director. And the story was basically, and that's how I got hired at Clifton, because it turns out that the principal at the time, Mr. Mooney,
was a Tom Cruise fan.
No, but his niece was in the production I directed with Tom of Guys and Dolls, by the way.
That Tom, I didn't know. News to me.
Yeah, it was Guys and Dolls. And basically what happened was the musical director came to me. I got this kid from my choir, and he's on crutches, so could you see him first? Now, I didn't know. Tom was a wrestler, and he sprained his ankle during wrestling season. And the only reason he came out for the play was that he couldn't run track. So he said, oh, I want to do something. I want to do the musical. So he auditioned for me, and I was, like, blown away. And I cast him as Neith in Detroit. And it was Mr. Mooney, the principal of Clifton High School, whose niece was there. That, and he
was
heard
she
that
Adelaide?
I don't know. It was a standing ovation type thing. And it obviously changed his life, you know, because he said to his parents after that, I want to be an actor. And they said, well, we'll give you 4 years. If you don't make it, you're going to go to college.
Well, let me ask, did you personally see something there in him, too?
Yeah. No, I saw it. In fact, I didn't want to cast him. He doesn't know this. I didn't want to cast him because I thought, for the first month, I'm going to be walking through his part.
Right.
And
right.
I was training horses in the morning and going and working with them in the afternoon. And I thought, I said to him, all right, you got the part. I said, just watch me, and when you get off crutches, do what I did. And he did it a little better. he was a little better looking, too.
How was his singing voice back then?
He sang, I don't want to give this away, but he auditioned for me with I Don't Know How to Love Him from Superstar. And it was,
Interesting choice.
I mean, he sent chills down my spine when he did it, because I thought, kid looked macho, you know, and like, and then he comes out with this. It's Mary Magdalene sings
right, exactly,
song. And it wasn't like the Judas version of it from. And when he did that, I said, this kid can do any part in the show, and that's when I cast. I thought, for me, Guys and Dolls, if you don't have Nathan, you don't have a show,
right?
And he
and surprise, we brought him with us. Just kidding.
Anyway, yeah, that's that story. I used to drive him home from rehearsals and get on him when he hadn't memorized his lines and stuff like that. So, because he's on crutches, I had to drive him home. So.
Really is kind of sad, because I think he would have done well in the WWE. Oh, well, who knows what happened to him now?
Who knows?
I don't know.
It's funny you bring up the Guys and Dolls in pre-show before we started. I knew that, you know, I was involved with both of you guys in one capacity or another 20 some odd years ago, not knowing that there was a connection with Dorothy and Peter.
Yes.
Here. Yeah. Yeah.
We had that magical moment before the show started.
So Pete, help me out here. How did you guys meet?
Well, it was again a play. way back when I attended St. Philip's school. Catholic school, obviously, here at Clifton.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a wonderful principal there by the name of Sister Renee.
Yeah,
Sister Renee Donahue. She's the one who instilled the love of performance in me.
Yeah.
And as she did so many kids. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic woman.
And she would do plays not only throughout the school year, but even though the school only went up to eighth grade, she would get high school kids and do shows in the summertime. And when I was a youngster, I was brought in to do one of the kids' parts in The Sound of Music. I was Kurt. And our
God
Maria.
Bless Kurt.
adieu to you, and yeah, and yeah. That was me. Yeah.
He still does that, actually.
I do, actually.
It's disturbing sometimes.
That one stuck with me.
Old habits die hard.
Yeah.
You know.
I do that more than Guys and Dolls or anything else.
Yes, you do.
Although, no, I must say, I do Tevye.
Yeah, I saw you do Tevye.
Yeah. Yeah. I was proud of Tevye.
Yeah, that's a great musical.
Yeah, I did, that was our eighth grade play with Sister Renee, and I was her Tevye. And I, if I do say so myself, for a 13-year-old Irish Catholic, part Dutch, part Italian boy from the suburbs, I made a pretty convincing middle-aged Russian Jew.
Fantastic.
And you still do today, actually.
Thank you. Well, and Sister Renee was a shrewd director for a little nun.
Oh, yeah.
She did not let you get away with anything.
She was ruthless.
Yeah, she was ruthless. She was a real passionate.
I remember when we were doing Guys and Dolls in the summer, we were rehearsing up until 2 hours before showtime.
Yeah, yep. Yep. Oh, she left no stone unturned. No. Very detailed.
I just found it very coincidental and cool how that just kind of
when they say together. Six, you guys, is it 6 degrees of separation?
6 degrees. Yeah. Well, when you're in a tiny little town theater like Clifton,
funny
people are bound to know. For those of you who don't know, Clifton's huge.
Clifton is I think it's the biggest town in New Jersey.
Something like that.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that because 6 degrees of separation was my first show.
No way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I played one of the kids of the parents when they all get together and reminisce over the photo album, the high school yearbook, and put pieces together. And that was my first thing. Yeah.
Where was that?
That was in Nutley.
Okay. So you didn't do theater. You didn't do the shows in Clifton High when you were there?
Nope.
No, he was too cool.
Oh.
No, I wasn't. Was not cool at all.
He was gung-ho band cool.
Well, the band was pretty cool.
It was pretty cool.
The band was cool in Clifton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was not American Pie band geek.
No,
You guys.
I was so confused when I went to college and everyone was like, oh, band geeks. And I was like, really? Because it was nice in my school.
it was brutal, though. I mean, all the
Mr. Morgan retired.
Hardcore. Oh, yeah.
Now, he's back, you know.
Yeah.
He had retired.
For now. Yeah, he retired a year ago, right?
Right.
Yes.
And then there was the new musical director there.
Things didn't work out.
I heard things didn't work out.
Right.
Sure.
And so they had to bring back the old guy.
You know what? Those are some big shoes to fill.
But just for the marching band, though.
But you know what? Just for the marching band. Do it.
I think so.
He is a classic Mr. Morgan.
I had a nickel for every time he was on that megaphone yelling at somebody for something.
Yeah.
And the funniest part is I used to live, and no one outside of Jersey or Clifton's actually going to even care about this who's listening right now, but Peter and I, growing up, lived on Valley Road, which is only about 5 minutes around the corner from here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up on a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And after I graduated, because I was in the band, so it wasn't until after I graduated that I was at home, still living home with my folks in college, and in my bathroom, which outlooked over the area, you could hear Morgan on that speaker.
Oh, yeah.
2.5 to 3 miles away. That's how crazy it was. And it took me a while to realize that was what was going on. And then I realized, it's
so
the end
funny.
Of August. It's 7 o'clock at night. And
we are practicing. We're running some drills.
And these are not country miles for those of you who are not familiar with
this. No.
These are packed suburbs.
Yeah.
There are plenty of trees around.
Well, and it's right behind the field that they practice is right behind where you get your well water.
Yes.
So whenever you would go fill up your water, by the city hall, you'd hear some of practice. That was always a fun thing to do after I graduated.
One of the shows, Bill, that you wound up doing that I remember very vividly because I was in your class the year that you did it was the film Harvey.
Oh, Harvey, yes.
And I know that you have an affinity for it, as well as I can remember. Because I remember while this whole thing was going on, it seemed like you ate, breathed, and slept Harvey. And so much that, I mean, you were running it in the class for us to watch, to catch us up on it and get us prepped for it and show us what you're working on. And what was it about Harvey for you?
Well, I love Jimmy Stewart and I love the Big White Rabbit too, but it was the transcendental aspect of it, and I always tried to squeeze into my lessons this that the thing is like all the stuff we have here tonight. It's not coincidence. There's all these connections going around, and it's like Elwood P. Dowd, who Jimmy Stewart played, is the ultimate transcendental character, and I just loved him. He deals with only once during that whole movie does he become disturbed, or otherwise he's
He's so above all of us here on Earth with our problems, and it's he's the one accused of being crazy, and it's everybody else around him
it's like he has the issues. It's like he found utopia, and no one else knew about it.
Right, and it was, I guess, what I wanted to get across to my students is, I think the transcendental mind finds you. You know, you can't force it. It has to come to you. And it came to Elwood in the form of this big white rabbit. And
it was a great play. I came to see that actually after I graduated. It was beautiful.
Yeah, Tony Grosso played played Tony Elwood Grosso. P. Dowd.
Very
Yeah, so that was my, any chance I could get. And it's that spiritual aspect, and it's ironic, because we also did there It's a Wonderful Life. I put together an original musical version of It's a Wonderful Life. And ironically, after the production, a girl started hanging around my after school class there. And after a while, she introduced herself and told me her name was Dorothy. And she was from Poland. She had never seen It's a Wonderful Life. And before Christmas, she was going to take her own life. And her girlfriend dragged her up, oh, my friend's in this play, come see it. And she saw It's a Wonderful Life. And she said, I realized that when I saw that play, that my life had some importance. And I didn't go through with the act, and I wanted to thank you. She sent me cards. Every year I'd find a card in my mailbox around Christmas. Mr. DeAndrea, it's really a wonderful life. And ironically, I couldn't get the message across to my own daughter, my own stepdaughter. I never wanted... As in the play, the stepfather becomes a character, and he's never the stepfather. He's her mother's husband, you know, because they couldn't tie the word to father, you know, and I understood it, and I never pressed. But that was the irony for me, you know. But it's all through the Jimmy Stewart character. He's such a great actor.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You just fell in love with him, you know, on all different levels.
It's funny, too, because I saw your production, I believe, of It's a Wonderful Life.
I played Clarence Oddbody, AS2, Angel Second Class.
Which reminds me, which also reminded me of a character that you brought into class a lot, Stinky.
Oh, no. Don't tell the world about Stinky.
You know, it's so funny.
I used to channel that kid, okay?
It's funny because I forgot about it until, you know, we started talking about having you come onto the show. And and all of a sudden, your brain processes things, and it's funny what actually comes back, you know?
Stinky, the bomb! You don't know this.
No.
But anyway, every once in a while, I let this kid channel me, and he would he would take over the class. And he almost got in fights with kids in the classroom.
Oh, no.
But
No, there were some bad kids in Clifton High School that he probably wouldn't want to mess with.
Anyway, yeah, I remember Stinky.
But no, I had seen the show, and I had not seen the movie yet.
Oh, you hadn't?
Either.
Oh, wow.
And it was what got me to want to see it.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. But and one of the things, because it's weird also, I have a huge affinity for old film. And looking back, I think a lot of that has a lot to do with you and some of your influences, introducing me to Jimmy Stewart and Harvey and It's a Wonderful Life, and appreciating that storytelling and that kind of storytelling. I'm a huge classic film aficionado. Mm-hmm. Actually, Cary Grant's one of my personal favorites.
Yeah.
So
The Bishop's Wife.
It is really funny. They, I think Oprah did a show on the fact that you never know how you affect people's lives. You know, a lot of times, like you were saying about your stepdaughter, you know, you want to have a certain effect, or you're trying, but yet there's all these other people in the world that you touch. Even, you know, the guy that pumped your gas this morning or whatever.
Right, right.
And you have no idea, like, how you will have touched their lives. You know, now, you know, you're a big classical movie buff because of your English teacher
in
high school.
Yeah, and again, it's one of those things that you don't think about until...
Yeah.
You start trying to, you know, in prepping
it's
for
really
the show,
amazing.
Going back into the memory, and you realize that a lot of these things come from somewhere, and it's like, you know, Mr. DeAndrea was one of those guys that did that.
Well, I'm glad.
You know, looking back at your professional and even your teaching career, what kind of moments stand out for you?
Well, I think this year was the year we sort of look for that purpose in our lives, and I had stopped writing altogether, and after Kim died, I picked up the guitar again, and it was at that point I said, well, maybe this is what I'm here for. Because I always thought, I had three opportunities to go to Broadway with shows I've written, and then I gave it up. I said, it's just not meant to be, and then this happened, and that's why I wrote this. And I think Dorothy really helped me, as she saw it, as, you know, it was the pieces of putting it together, each pulling things from the past, and slowly people saying, you know, this may work, but we were dealing with such a dark subject, I had my doubts. It's like, how do you get people out to see a show about somebody who took their own life?
Right.
You see, and so now I changed a subtitle to it, and it's now called Nether Region, and the subtitle is Emmeline and the Archangel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got like this, you know, this desire to make it more open to other people. What do you think? You know what?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's really, through the play, Emmeline, the girl, and the Archangel are always butting heads because he's got to take her through to face things that she wouldn't face during her life. And becomes, you know, the head butting becomes sort of, you know, how do you say to an angel, I know, you know.
Yeah, that's like talking to your parents, you know.
Right?
Ultimately.
And Dorothy's role in it, and it was based on my mother-in-law who died, and it was the first experience with death my stepdaughter had when she couldn't accept her and her grandmother were so close. And Dorothy played that role. So like I said, after she passes in the play, she's like by the child's bedside at night, you know, trying to get her to go on. She knows where she's heading, and it's eventually Dorothy that approaches the archangel and says, you gotta help my, and he says, I can't. And basically, he's saying she's got in mind, she has to come to me, with like vampires, he says. We must be invited in, you know, and she isn't about to do it.
Are you spoiling the entire show for me now? Or?
So spoiler alert.
But I'm, you know.
No vampires.
How though. She.
Oh. For, don't be
how
disappointed.
She connects, and the dealing with Lucifer and the demons. Actually, in the play, there's an exorcist.
I'm going to stop you right there. We're going to take a quick break.
Right.
I do want to get into character types and what they symbolize in the show as well. And I do have more questions about the musical when we come back. I think we got an apropos song. Our good friend Jonathan Tiersen, his song Vertigo, I think is very apropos for tonight's show. Pete, you got that queued up?
Yep. Enjoy. We'll be right back.
You're a pilot flying, you have great skills across the sky just by your will. But if you change direction, there's a choice you must make. The ground or the sky, this isn't just fate. Question your judgment, 'cause you know the way, and try not to listen to what I have to say. 'Cause my recollection, well, it isn't so good. From takeoff to touchdown, I wish that I could. We'll be right back. despite all this pain. And I never understood a love without blame. Now here I am falling, and I see you again. We're spinning and turning right to the end. But if the plane crashes,
know me from the Hellboy movies or the Silver Surfer or Pan's Labyrinth or Hocus Pocus. The list goes on, but today you are listening to non-productive.com.
And we are back, Loud Idiots Radio Show. I have Bill DeAndre and Dorothy Dabkowski with us. We're talking about your musical Nether Region. We started to get ready to go into it, but let's talk about some of the characters in the play, because you're talking about personifications of Lucifer and the Archangel Michael, and
what I had wanted to do was to put the icons there for the kids to see. You know, I wanted Michael to be like a superhero, not like, you know, to them. And
he was very like Nike with the, you know, the wings and the
and we did a really they do have a big sword fight at the gates of hell, and we had it choreographed by this combat guy. And but what I wanted to get into is why, because if there was a movie out recently, The Rite, and it seems like the demons are always trying to get the young people to take their own lives.
Was that the Anthony Hopkins movie?
Exactly. It was an excellent movie. He did such a great job in that, and he was like, sort of like the exorcist we had. Our exorcist was sort of the comic relief, but at the same time, he's on top of things, and he looks bumbling and everything, and that was his character.
Yeah.
And
so you didn't have Stinky portraying him?
No.
Okay. I'm just
actually, this guy was portrayed. I forget his name. He owns a bakery nearby.
Yeah, Joe and
Hawthorne. Oh, right, Joe.
Yeah, Joe DeSpiritu. And
but his character was just very funny and sweet and endearing, and he kind of, you know, comes crashing through on his bicycle, and you know, he's always blessing everything, and it's really sweet.
All right. And you know, he was based on a character I met here in Clifton in the church here. There was a church, it's a Catholic church, but it's got a weird name. It was like two long names anyway. I had interviewed him to find out why, what is with the demons? And he basically said to me, I just get rid of them. I don't figure out that's where somebody's stronger than me. You know, the demonic motivations.
He was like that wise fool, you know, kind of stereotype, you know, where you think someone is so so silly and slapstick, but actually they're the wisest person in the whole show.
Nice. Yeah.
But so. I did use a quote from Dr. Faustus, and it was basically the one that's in Latin in the play,
yeah.
But it means misery loves company. They like to take people that are heading towards the right way and the beauty of heaven and God and everything, and those are the ones. So the mother, which was my wife in this, I based it on her because she never lost her faith. You know, you would think you lose a child through that of all ways. And she just never lost her faith in Jesus and in God.
We all asked her, the whole cast was like, are you okay? You know, here we are. Even when we did the reading at the house and, you know, you could see her feeling very emotional about it. But she said, I'm really glad we're telling the story and, you know, it needs to be told and hopefully it'll help others, you know.
Yeah, Kathy, my wife, she'd cry every night, but the play ended so joyfully for her. It was, you know, it just helped purge, you know. It's something you don't get over that easily, and it always haunts you. But
were there moments for you, whether it be during rehearsals or sitting back and watching the live performances, that you yourself would go back and relive any of that?
Yeah, especially, you know, when I had to feed the help the character that was playing his name was Harry, the guy Harry that was Don Sheffrin, who Dorothy worked with. We did our murder mystery. He was in our murder mystery.
Oh, we got to talk about that too.
Yeah. Anyway, when I would have to give him, you know, some of my confrontations with her, I never pushed things with her. But one that last day, she came back and she said, "Do you think I'm going to hell?" Now, I didn't know she was saying in terms of her suicide, because she wasn't telling us that's what she had intended to do. But she was really pressing her mother, and we didn't know she was foreshadowing what she was planning to do, you know.
Wow.
So, those moments, you know, because they're in, we did use those lines in the play, "Am I going to hell?"
Wow.
And then she winds up at the gates of hell. And saved through the intervention of you and
a text message.
A text message, yes.
A text message to the archangel, which is what sort of brings her back. And
hey,
it's very hard to understand, but she goes by her granddaughter's bed and just puts these words in her head: LHM, which was Lord help me, and that she has to remember at that critical time. So in a sense, Michael the Archangel says, you got to send her a text. She says, I can't dial her on the phone, you know. He said, but there's a certain part of her dream state where you can get this message across to her.
I think it's quite uplifting to think that a person's soul can even sort of in the afterlife still move and grow and, you know, get to a better place.
Right.
It was really beautiful, you know, at the end, and they sort of, it's very sort of Les Mis-esque, you know, where everyone sort of comes back and sings this beautiful song at the end.
The song at the end really made it all worthwhile. Yeah. You know, yep. It really did. It's on my trailer, which is, I'm working on my website, but it's Heavenly Realm. heavenlyrealm.com. heavenlyrealmproductions.com.
Sure.
And there's a link to the trailer and that song. Yeah. The trailer ends with that song, part of it. So
for a lot of our audience who may not know, it's very much like movies. I mean, getting a show put together is a task. There's a lot of obstacles. What kind of pratfalls did you wind up coming across and getting this done?
Well, first, getting a place. Mm-hmm. That was it. We had done the murder mystery in West Milford at the Elks Club in West Milford, and the purpose of that was to raise money so we could do the show.
Well, tell us a little bit about that first.
So
right.
Fun. Another original production.
Because I just heard about this recently.
It was entitled Clueless, and it basically was formed around the characters in the Clue game, but we made up different names for them. We had Soupy Split Pea was really Mr. Green. We had Colonel Dijon was Colonel Mustard, and but we did all these names and the characters, and it all centers around whether West Milford was going to have septic system or sewers.
And the election of the mayor.
And it was the election of the mayor who had his own septic company.
I'm sold.
That
is so sold.
That is not a small issue. Up
and
there.
His name was Potty. Mr. Potty.
Yes,
and but he says no, it's Podi.
I just had Hetty and Headley.
I played Lieutenant Lumbago, and I was wanding everybody as they came in with to see if they had, because there was a threat against his life when he was running for mayor, and so everybody had to be wanded.
It was a lot of fun to do. A lot of fun. The audiences can be a little rowdy at dinner theater, you know.
Really?
Well, because they're yelling, "I know who did it. You did it," you know. And
but truthfully, I want to bring it to this area again. We heard people say this was the best murder mystery they had ever seen.
We went to one. Yep, up down in Mario's.
Fact, yeah, we got a couple of our characters at that. It was at Mario's here in Clifton. Yeah.
Oh wow,
they're a lot of fun.
Forever.
They do them often. They do them a couple times a year.
So we're thinking maybe of bringing. Clueless there.
so that was used as a stepping stone to help.
And through that, the mayor of West Milford, we actually put her in the show. She came to a show, and she set me up with the Journey Church in West Milford.
Mm-hmm.
They donated the space to us.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
When they heard it was an anti-suicide thing, and and that's what I'm saying, you know,
really cool.
Tom Cruise screening is that, yeah. Are these things coincidences? I mean, we would have never been able, if I had to pay $5,000 to rent theater, we wouldn't have been able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got the beautiful video from it, so I really think that it was in the hands of greater power for us.
I'm still waiting for that to see that video now, so I can experience the show. You know,
there's some
enhancements that they're doing that are really cool. I don't know if you've seen them on Facebook. You know, mm-hmm. a couple times there's some.
Yeah,
posts.
The special. I'm learning the Sony Vegas Pro 13. All of a sudden, I'm turning into Steven Spielberg here. But I love it. Yeah. I mean, but you spend hours.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
as you must know from your editing.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing what you can do with it now.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
The tools that exist. Out there for almost anybody.
That and scheduling, you know, it's hard to get everybody together for rehearsals, you know, and everybody's got jobs.
And we did score with Anna, right?
Yes, Anna Louise, what a beautiful, she's a professional ballet dancer.
And she's like featured ballet person from New Jersey.
New Jersey Ballet,
she just,
gorgeous.
I don't know how I got her to do this, but
she likes to. I mean, she does a lot of, she does not only dancing, but she does commercials and model work, you know, print work and she likes to act, so I think she was looking for a venue.
She has a little, she's not getting too many roles because she has a bit of an accent. But then we need, the last performance, she got called in to do some New Jersey Ballet thing, and we had to get somebody else to replace her for the last, and we picked up a girl that
from
Montclair State that
also beautiful.
Did a great job. So I believe there was things working behind the scenes for us. I really do.
Yeah.
So... I don't want to get too heavy about
it. Everything replete with dance numbers and angels
and devil
demons and text messages.
Let me ask you.
How much more can you want? How much more can you ask for?
I don't think there was a
kick
line. No singing cats. And I don't think there was a kick line. But, you know,
there's
future
still time.
Days.
I thought about
there's a sequel coming.
Well, actually, my next question is, where do you go from here? The show just recently finished up or... You know, some time ago, right?
Right. Well, we only did six performances, right? Four performances in West Milford. I want to bring it to this area because of my record here with Clifton High School and everything. And I just got to find the place, whether it's Sacred Heart in Bloomfield or one of the churches up here. Yeah. I'm having, you know, it's tough for schools now. There's a politically correct mindset now that we're dealing with in our society, and you can't mention Michael the Archangel and Lucifer, and, you know, it's all right to talk about, you know, like The Walking Dead and zombies and vampires and stuff, but, you know, if you try to say there are spiritual forces out there that are dark and there are ones that are good, then they know they shoot you down now. Like, I don't think I would be able to do It's a Wonderful Life at Clifton High School now.
Really? I mean, is it that? Yeah.
I think we're all speechless.
If they're being fair,
probably not.
It's hard to fathom something like that. Something that's so beloved and classic. I get what you're saying though.
If they followed their rules strictly, they'd have to shoot it down.
When I got a card that said "Happy Winter Solstice" from the highest administrator, I knew he couldn't. That was CYA. You know, basically he couldn't say Merry Christmas, even to the, you know, people that did celebrate Christmas. It was so I, you know, when they heard about this in West Milford High School, wouldn't even let me put flyers up there.
So this is what it's come to then, huh?
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Well, I mean, the idea of trying to set up a new performance, I mean, and looking for places, I mean, you're a teacher that's who's influenced a lot of kids over the years. I mean, what about the idea of social media and people in the area and reaching out and seeing who's...
Well, that's
who
what
knows
I'm hoping that this is a start and...
Oh, wait, you think I can help you?
Well, this is a pretty nice studio, Ken.
Here's your $20.
Unfortunately, we're about at capacity, so I don't know.
That's true. And has burned so many bridges. You just don't even.
So if we could fit all four audience members in the side aisles, that would be great.
But no, I mean, like, it sounds like a great show. I mean, you've done some fantastic stuff, even if it's at a high school level. I mean, the production values of what you did were fantastic. Mm-hmm. The amount of talent you had, even if they were kids, you knew, you had an eye, you had an ear to know who to look for and who to cast vocally
whatever. Well, we had three Clifton High School graduates. Dorothy, we had Victoria Womans, who took over the ingenue parts for you. And Chris Robertson. And Chris played Byron. He was the one that came out of the audience. And did an outstanding job. It was dramatic. People cried and laughed. And, you know, I don't want to overplay it, but it did everything I had visioned it to do.
Exciting, I think, coming out of, you know, Clifton High School and knowing that you're working with people who followed you, you know, 20 years later,
right.
And you're kind of working together. It's very, it feels like a family, you know, you really, like, I didn't go to my high school reunion. I wasn't going to. I don't think I'm going to go back.
Well, they do say you really can never go back.
You can really never go back. But to then work with people that you know graduated from the same
school. Let me just tell you, Tom Cruise didn't go to his high school reunion at Glenridge either.
I feel better. See how connected we are.
Now, this almost seemed like it was a show that came out of you based on your own personal necessity.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a story you really had to tell. Is there another project that you've had in the back of your head, too, that you've always wondered, you know, if I could, I would do it?
This is pretty much it. I mean, I had originally seen this as a trilogy. Okay, so I am working on the sequel to it because I don't know if they do trilogy musical plays on stage, you know, but I'm on the first.
Andrew
Lloyd
Webber has done sequels, and they don't work out too well fan-wise, apparently.
What did he do a sequel to?
Phantom.
He did?
Love Never Dies came out about 5 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I liked it.
I personally liked it, too.
I don't even remember.
Phantom moves to Coney Island, and
yep.
It's 10 years later.
Yeah.
Huh.
So, but no, I mean, I got to see it first. I'd like to see it first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, the idea of a sequel
coming soon, maybe.
Well, there are things that were set up in this one that can be expounded upon in the future. I did, and I don't want to, if I open that door, I'll be talking too long. But I did, as my stepdaughter... was an affirmed atheist, but she wasn't just an atheist. She was an apostle for atheism. It was, you know, something. And before I did this, I said, you know, Kim, I need a sign from you. And I got that sign. And
That was posted online too, right?
I mentioned it. You know, I didn't go into the specifics of it, but that would also be part of the sequel, you know. I don't know if I should bring up the subject, but I always told you kids, and this is, I could have got fired as a teacher, but,
well, it's all right now.
Yeah, I know. No worries.
When I was 22 years old, I had a spontaneous out of body experience, and I thought I died. I was looking down at my body.
You actually did tell us.
Yeah, and it was, and since then I've had like numerous other experiences, and I had one with my stepdaughter Kim afterwards, and she proved in front of my wife too. She was like, she blew her mind.
Wow.
That we knew definitely this was the answer, that we could go ahead and do the play.
And I think it's just permission. Fascinating, too, when you know that what you're going to see is based on true events. I'm always, I love a good story, but I think when I know that that story is true, it's just more compelling, to see it or to figure out, to find out, oh, there's more I'd love to see, the next part, next,
But I knew that there were going to be some people in there that were saying, oh, God, this guy is like, Lucifer and St. Michael. And, I knew there was going to be that kind of blockage, too.
Right.
I know the people that had faith, and this is where I'm not sure, people that had faith loved it. They were like, they were rejoicing after it. But I don't know if the skeptics were probably looking at it with tilted eyes,
Then perhaps another performance is needed to find that out.
Yeah, I had intended for kids, and we just couldn't reach the kids in advertising because of the schools blocking us. So we had mostly adults for the audience. So I thought if we do it here, and we can tap into maybe parochial school or private schools to come see it.
That's right. We did it last year, right around the end of October, beginning of November, because it was, Bill was trying to theme it
Halloween,
out too. Like Halloween, All Saints, All Souls, and all that sort of thematic.
Yeah, we ended, our last show was on All Saints Day. So. Yeah.
Wow.
I
hate to say this, but we are starting to run out of time.
Oh.
It is almost
very
that
fast.
Time. Yeah, right? Listen, for both of you guys, how do we find out what's going on with you, and if we can find out more about the productions?
All right, the website would be the best way I'm starting to build it up now because I almost have the DVD and Blu-ray discs ready to go out, and we're donating.
He's doing Blu-rays. Yeah. We're not even doing Blu-rays. Wait a minute.
High tech.
We're donating. The guy who filmed this for me is he deals with the orphans in Haiti, and so we're donating $1 out of everything we sell to his project, and also to the Journey Church, which opened this door for me.
Well,
I wouldn't have been able to do this without their donating their space. I mean, I made a small donation to them, but nothing compared to the time we used it.
Then let me know when it's available. I'll be one of the first people.
And go to my website, www.heavenlyrealmproductions.com. And right now the trailer's up there, and there's no way to purchase the thing now because it won't be ready for another week.
Okay.
But I'll... If anybody's interested, they could follow it there.
We'll
tap back to it every once in a while.
We'll be counting on your check.
Dot, how about you? What do you have going on?
I'm actually a part of another original musical coming up very shortly that's going up in November called The Choir Room. It's about a church choir and some of the personalities that you might find there. That's going up in Mattawan and then hopefully back into Bill's hands to do this, Clueless again, and followed by Netherregion.
Got to know when that's going on, too. I got to see that one now. Yeah. All right. That is going to do it for us. You ready, Pete?
I'm all set.
All right.
Thank you so much for having us.
Not a problem.
Thank you so much, Ken. Thank you. Good to see you guys, and nice meeting you, Pete.
Yeah.
On that note, I am Longshot Ken.
I'm Big Papa Pete. Loud Idiots, out!
As I head out on the highway, coming out of my hometown, from the Golden Gate clear across the state, just how much has gone down. Then I stop to have some coffee as the truckers roll on by. On the open road I see fancy homes, airliners in the sky, and you can see it in America with its freedom near and far. got Disneyland, one night stands, and photographs of Mars. Then I pull into the Midwest, and I can see her golden plains, where the pioneers in the early years watched the red man make his change. Then I pull into Ohio, the place where I was born. But I turn my head, 'cause the lake is dead, and my dreams have all been torn. And you can see it in America, with its freedom near and far. We've got Disneyland, one night stands, photographs of Mars. The sun sets on the east coast, there's a statue standing tall, but a rising tide on the New York side says she's bound to take a fall. But a fall might be a soft wall that her money just can't buy. I see rushing crowds, buildings in the clouds, and a lack of human pride. And you can see it in America, with its freedom near and far. We've got Disneyland, one night stands, and photographs of Mars. And you can see it in America, with its freedom near and far. We've got Disneyland, one night stands, and photographs of Mars.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.